This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest end of season report part two. I'm Nick Gillard, and joining me tonight we've got a very special guest. Rather than like all season having people who don't know what they're talking about talking to you, we've got our friend from The Athletic, Matt Wisdom. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. I was just asking before, when do you go on holiday? Do you have a fixed holiday time as a football journo?
No, there's no fixed holiday. Still got to be busy during the off-season and pre-season. Getting up early with the Australia games to watch those on Palace TV. No fixed holidays.
Yeah, so you mean they're not flying you out there?
Unfortunately not, no.
Bastards.
That voice you can hear there is Chris Clark. How you doing, Chris?
Hello, Nick. Yeah, not too bad. Been... quite a roller coaster season, as people are going to hear. We've obviously already talked about that, and now we're going to get some insights from Matt. Looking forward to hearing from him. In this slightly more formal setting than normally when we catch up after games or even during games occasionally. Good to have you on, mate.
And last but no means least, we've got Patrick O'Connor from over there in the States. How you doing, mate?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's been an up and down season. Now we're going to kick off. We're going to interrogate our special guest. Okay. So I don't know if Chris is able to see the running document that we've got, but Patrick, do you want to come in with the first question there, mate?
Sure. So Matt, what are your thoughts on Vieira's appointment now compared to with what they were when he came in?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting season, a very positive season. There's some obvious areas of improvement required, game management particularly, throwing away goals late on in games, just conceding stupid goals. Leicester at home, I know it was the first half of the season, but that sticks in the mind. And obviously the capitulation at Everton on the penultimate game of the season, which... obviously, you have to caveat that with the fact that Everton were very much up for it and could secure safety, but Palace shouldn't really have capitulated in the way that they did. Vieira spoke of Palace showboating. I don't think he quite meant it in the way that we understand it, but I think he meant that like they weren't quite, sort of, they were keeping the ball too long and things like that. But it's been a good season.
Sorry, just as a sidebar there, I've got to come in because this I only found this out during the season. Talking about people saying things that don't come out as you quite understand it. Jose Mourinho, the special one, I think I might have heard it on an Athletic pod actually, talking about how he said he was the special one, but his version of what special is was more of unique, as in special being very, very good.
Right.
Did you know that, Patrick?
I did.
Sorry. Bit all over the place there, Matt. Sorry to interrupt, but I thought I'd get that in there as a bit of interest because, he's not as bad as you might think he is coming out with that nonsense.
I think some of the things that Vieira says, I think you have to appreciate the difference in language. English isn't his first language. He's obviously very fluent in it, but there are some things that he says that you have to realise, you think about what he says. But at the start of the season, you know, there was a lot of pressure on him. There was a very disappointing start to the season. But I think everyone realised that it was going to sort of get worse before it got better. It was going to take a while to bed in and for everything to settle down. And there have been rocky patches along the way, particularly with the games against Brentford and Norwich, where, you know, didn't really threaten too much. You know, probably should have won both games in reality. And there was pressure ahead of the Watford game, which obviously was a comprehensive victory. But it's been a very good season. And I think that the vast majority of people will be delighted about how well Patrick Vieira's done, you know, especially given that there's been such a turnaround and such a turnover of players, and it's a much younger squad as well. So I think, you know, all in all, he's certainly defied expectations, things to work on. He admits that, he accepts that. But yeah, I think everyone's excited for next season.
Yeah, I want to add, though, I have to admit, though, I mean, I like most fans, was upset with the capitulation in matches, especially Everton. But when you look at the fixtures, honestly, the only one we had before them was the Chelsea match, obviously the one at home when we lost in the last minute. So you got to give him credit, because I think we actually learned a lot from the Leicester matches early, the Leeds match early in the season. So we being Vieira. So I got to give him a lot of credit. For a first-year Premier League manager, he really did a fantastic job in getting a young squad to really get over those, you know, that thing. And I think the Everton thing is an aberration. That pitch invasion, really, it really turned things around, you know, for that. But yeah, you're right, Matt. I mean, you have to give him, you know, you have to admit it's been a really good, you know, turnaround for Vieira on that front. So
yeah, I think you make a good point there about learning along the way as well. I think Vieira has learned a lot along the way as well. I think you can see that. I think he appeared to be quite flexible to begin with, then settled on a particular side. Giving you an insight into a piece I'm going to write next week, actually. And then he went back to changing things around a little bit. You know, at the start of the season and for quite a long time, Palace were very expansive, very progressive. And actually, when you think about the last couple of months or so, perhaps since the Chelsea game in the FA Cup, it's actually gone a little bit more towards the counter-attacking type of team. Right. The style of how Palace have played, certainly with the expansive elements, but certainly not as much as it was before. And I think it's really interesting to see how things have changed.
So I want to follow up real quickly with that, because, you know, the style of play. How much do you think is attributable to what Ocean Roberts has brought to Palace this season as an assistant manager?
I think Ocean Roberts has obviously influenced Vieira. They obviously worked together when Vieira took the FA Wales coaching course, with Roberts being his mentor. So they're obviously very close. I'm certain that they work together and they appear to work together well. But I think Patrick Vieira is his own man. And I would say that the majority of what we've seen is Vieira and what he's implemented. And then the coaching staff are there to support him. So I don't think it's necessarily Roberts is taking the lead on it. I think it's mostly Vieira with Roberts and Christian Diamond, Said Aigon and the rest of the coaching staff, Sean Derry, all helping out.
Yeah, Derry seems to have made the step up well as well, doesn't he? We've had some really good recruitment over the last couple of windows. Some surprises. I mean, we were all surprised when we got Chappie in for Reading, whose name was completely one of my players of the season, came out of left field. So how much of the recruitment now is down to Patrick, and how much is down to Dougie? Is Dougie coming to Patrick and saying, look, I've got this player, I think he'll suit it? Is Patrick saying, I want this sort of player? Or is Patrick Vieira naming players that he wants Dougie to go after?
Yeah, so I think, you know, at the start of the season, obviously, Patrick Vieira came in relatively late to the process. Palace kind of had their ideas and what they wanted, and the whole point was that they were going to reform and transform the squad, whatever happened, whichever manager was in charge. And whichever manager did get hired had to fit in with what they were going to do. You know, headed up by the sporting director, Dougie Freeman, backed by Steve Parish, the chairman, You know, I think whichever manager was appointed was going to have to look to recruit players who fitted that sort of that style of playing more expansively, perhaps, and who certainly were younger in particular. The age of the squad had to come down. But the most important thing to note about Palace's recruitment is the mentality of the players. Palace don't necessarily recruit based on age. I mean, yes, they clearly do to some extent, but the most important thing is getting the player, the person right, first of all. If you don't sort of create that squad harmony, which we've seen this season how good that's been, then you're not going to get the results out of those players that you want. And I think that has been perhaps the most important part of the recruitment.
Yeah, no, I mean, I totally agree, Matt. And it's great to see that there does seem to be an agenda behind the recruitment now, whereas, you know, at times in the past, it seems like we've almost, you know, just panic bought. And I'm talking, you know, years ago now, especially that first promotion season where it was absolute chaos.
Ian Holloway's transfer blunderbuss target.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
Whereas now we actually do seem to have a plan, an agenda, and a style of football that we're trying to recruit. And as you said, a mentality. So on that, have you heard any whispers of more incomings? And what positions do you think are most important for Palace to fill?
Yeah, I think for me, it's got to be centre midfielding. Everyone can see that needs sort of cover / competition / upgrade. You know, not too sure what's happening with Cheick Kouyaté at the moment. Possibility that he may not return. His contract is due to expire. Obviously, he was linked with other clubs in January. I can't remember exactly what club it was, but you know, the suggestion was he had signed a pre-contract agreement, which I don't think was the case, but certainly there are, you know, clubs that are interested in taking him. And I mean, you know, again, he's coming sort of towards the end of his career, so I wouldn't be overly surprised to see him depart. I'm not saying he will, but I can see him leaving. Obviously, James McArthur has been outstanding when he's played this season, but unfortunately for him, his body is starting to, you know, his age is starting to catch up with him, and his body hasn't really been there at the top of it.
Wait till you hit 50, man.
So, you know, I think it's pretty clear that the centre of midfield is going to be a key aspect of Palace's recruitment this summer. You know, Cheick Doucouré at Lens, it's been reported already, but he is someone that Palace are very keen to sign. You know, sort of a holding midfielder who can allow those players ahead of him to do what they need to do. I think a lot of it will depend on how Palace intend to play and how Palace set up next season. You know, you've seen Vieira change from having two sort of almost holding midfielders, like a four and a six alongside each other, to having two number eights. I prefer it when Palace play with two number eights, with James McArthur and Conor Gallagher. I think that gets the best out of Conor Gallagher. And I think that we saw that towards, as the season progressed, that Gallagher's form didn't quite hit the heights that it had, for many reasons, of course. But I think one of those reasons was the absence of McArthur alongside him to help facilitate him. Looks like Eddie Nketiah is now staying at Arsenal, so he was one that Palace were keen to do, but for whatever reason, that doesn't look like it's going to happen now, because he looks like he's going to stay at Arsenal.
Makes me happy, personally. Makes me happy. I'm not an Nketiah fan at all, so just saying.
I don't think there's need to cover at left back. I think you've got enough players who can do that. Tyreek Mitchell has played almost every game this season. We saw that, you know, Ward came in and did a good enough job there. Klein can play there if necessary. I think Yairo Riedewald's still under contract, so I think he can even cover there potentially. So, you know, there's players who can cover that position. I'd quite like to see an upgrade at right back.
So I'm just going to stop you there, because we're jumping about, because that's what we do on this show. At the start of the season, and this is open to everybody, and I'll start with you, Chris. Joel Ward if at the start of the season you'd have been told that he'd play so many games, be so important and help keep out Man United playing centre-back in the last game of the season, what would you have said to me? And what do you say about him now?
I'd have asked if you were drunk in respect of him playing at centre-back. I've seen him play in central defensive midfield roles and he's done a great job. Yeah, but that was 10 years ago when he had, you know, a little bit of pace.
Right.
Only a little bit. He wasn't fast then, and he's certainly not fast now. I would have said that he would continue to do a solid job at right back, but I'd have been very surprised at the number of appearances when we had Klein in the squad as well. So yeah, I'm surprised, but pleasantly so. I'm delighted that he's, you know, made it to 10 years, and you know, if it has been his last appearance for the club, then you know, I mean, he's been a great servant and someone who definitely deserves, you know, a proper testimonial celebration, because he's been a star for us.
Patrick? Yeah, I'd agree with Chris. Yeah, I think he's had an excellent season, Joel Ward. He's, you know, his versatility is outstanding and a massive, massive help to Palace and the squad. And I think that also helps to just with the transition. Just means that you don't have to go and buy certain positions. I mean, Palace are looking at buying centre-backs this summer. I think you've seen that is a requirement, that is a necessity to bring in someone at centre-back, a third centre-back. But I think that for the most part, he's done a really good job there. He's done a good job at left-back, he's done a good job at right-back. Wherever he plays, he's done a good job. I think, you know, I still think that if Palace are to progress, then they do need a different right back, a more sort of attacking right back. Even though, again, Nathaniel Klein did well. He's had a good season himself, certainly since he came back into the team. But I think that in maybe in a year's time, Palace will certainly look to bring another right back in. Probably wouldn't expect it to be this summer, but I wouldn't rule it out. But I think, you know, given that Klein looks like he's staying, I would probably think that it'll be next year. And I think that is really helpful, because then you can sort of prioritise elsewhere. You don't need to spend as much, and then you can spend more next summer and so on and so forth.
Yeah, your thoughts, Patrick, on Joel Ward? I mean, he got quite ag towards the end of the season, didn't he? Got involved in a few scuffles, and you know, being a devout Christian, we were a little bit surprised. And actually, against Man United, for the first time in all the time that he's been playing for us, I heard his name chanted. It's taken a long time.
Yeah, I've always been a big Ward fan. I mean, I at points in the season wanted to see Klein play right back, because of, I feel Klein brings different attributes that I think we need as a club, you know, more like what Mitchell does as far as going forward. But what I'd really like to see was how he transitioned those last couple of matches as a centre half, because as Matt just mentioned, you know, we're going to be in a market for one. Joel Ward may not be the ideal person, but the fact that he's so flexible and can play left back, now right back, obviously, and now centre half, gives us the ability to look at other places. So, for, you know, as far as transfers, but I thought he did a really good job this season. Again, he kept Klein out. I mean, Klein was injured, I guess, at the beginning of the season at some points, but to keep Klein out for so long, when Klein came in, you know, Ward still pushed him to get back into lineup. So I think Ward's done a great job, and he deserves that testimonial next season, and deserves another, you know, to be around for next year at least to celebrate him for those 10 years.
Yeah, marvellous. Sorry, that little sidebar there. Back to the transfers, Matt. Sam Johnson, hearing reports that we're close to signing. What's the deal there? Because Gaeta put a tweet out last week saying he's looking forward to next season, to seeing us next season. We'll have Butland, who I'm going to come on to when we talk about the first game and the second half of the season in a bit. So is there space for him? What's the deal there? What's the inside track?
Yeah, so my colleague Don Firefield wrote about this this morning, as we're recording, the day that we're recording this morning. Basically, Palace are close to signing Sam Johnston. He's out of contract with West Bromwich Albion this summer, so he'll be a free transfer, no compensation to be paid. And as a result of that, they're, you know, going to be listening to any offers for Jack Butland, is what Don said. You know, Butland's future at Palace is uncertain. It doesn't really mean anything for Vicente Guaita at the moment. the two are going to sort of fight it out to be first choice this coming season. I imagine, you know, Guaita's got the shirt, so it's his to lose. But yeah, basically it sounds like it's pretty close.
On the mention of Butland, I'm going to start talking about some of the games in the season, because the first one we're down to do, lads, is the Brighton game, Brighton away. And first of all, this season I went to nearly every game. There's only a few at the end I missed it. I actually never usually do away games. And it's amazing how different it is watching Palace at other grounds. Not only just to compare our own atmosphere at Selhurst to other grounds around the country, and I think only Leeds and Newcastle match it, to be honest. Chris, maybe you can back me up here. It's just amazing how football grips the country. What a great way to see the country. And Brighton away, we had a lock-in. Now, the last game they spoke about in the first match was Millwall away, and we were locked in after that game. Now, the difference is that they kept the bar open, didn't they, Chris? Was Brighton the best beer away game for you, selling Harvey's or not?
Well, in the ground, yes. But I'm extremely reluctant to say anything good about Brighton, the club, or Brighton the ground, Brighton the place. I mean, it's not as bad as Watford, frankly, even though they may well be, bigger rivals. I'm not going to say that they're derby type, because it's not a derby, but it is a rivalry. But yeah, I mean, probably on balance, they had the best beer, although I will say City away also had local beer available, and that was good, but almost nowhere else did. So yeah, definitely one of the more positive things. But should we talk about the game as well?
Yeah, because I think Jack Butland won that game for us.
Mm. Well,
with the penalty save. And coming after that mistake against Millwall, his name was chanted as well.
All right. Can I pull you up on that? How do you win a match that you drew 1-1?
Oh, sorry. Yes, okay. Well done.
Yeah.
It's been a long season.
I'm just saying.
You can take the teacher out of the classroom.
Yeah. It felt like a defeat, that, because, you know, having... we came away and obviously drove back together, didn't we, Nick? And it was one of those ones where we'd parked outside someone's house, and it was quite a weird little setup. But I'm pleased we went. It was, and I think we do have to replay, because, you know, part of the purpose of these pods is to kind of, you know, remember the more memorable incidents. Smoke bomb on the pitch, the Brighton fan running on the pitch when they got the penalty, coding us as though they've won the game.
Right.
Then getting kicked off, probably kicked out, probably getting a ban. Note how the reaction to pitch invasions changed over the season.
Great point.
That guy got an absolute kick in, whereas, well, actually, to be fair, the bloke Everton did as well, but he wasn't the only one. Actually, clubs have been able to get, and fans have been able to get away with a lot more, and that's going to be one of the complications in terms of looking at how fans are policed and what happens in the future.
Yeah.
I thought we were moving in a more positive direction with regard to fan culture, and that we were going to... I mean, there's even been talk that we might be allowed to drink beer inside of the pitch again. Definitely rail seating coming into some grounds, which is great. But anyway, yeah, this idiot on the pitch celebrating like they've won the game. And then, yeah, the penalty save. So wonderful, wonderful moment.
And the annual ripping down of the Lewis Dunk picture outside the ground as well.
Yeah.
That comes down every year. Graham Potter, I can't remember who said it, but somebody said in the season that Brighton are 2 years ahead in their project of Palace. What do you make of that? Matt, what do you make of that? You know, they're 2 years further down the line than we are. Do you view it like that or not?
I mean, technically, yes, but I think Palace have effectively just caught up with them, really. They finished above Palace in the league. Blame the capitulation at Everton for that. I think that's the one bit probably. I said in my season review piece, it would be churlish to really be disappointed by anything this season. But I suppose if you were to pick a disappointment to some extent, then, you know, allowing Brighton to finish above Palace because of that capitulation at Everton would be one of them. Obviously, the throwing away of the Selhurst as well. But to come back onto the point, I think Palace's recruitment has been very, very sensible, has been excellent, as we touched on before. It's exactly what the club needed, not only for the team, for the squad, but for the fans, especially coming back in after COVID, where they were locked out. And trust me, watching games with a few hundred people in a ground is really not an enjoyable experience. I can only imagine it's a lot worse. Well, I don't need to imagine. I did watch them on TV as well, but it was horrific. But I think the fact that Palace have recruited so well, so recruited some young players, dynamic young players with resale value, suggests to me that they're certainly sort of moving towards where Brighton have been doing for the last couple of years. I think Brighton also recruit at a younger age and a younger level, like sort of under, for their under 23 side. And Palace are doing that now as well. Their plan is to go out and buy sort of the best young players from other clubs as well. So I think Palace have actually probably caught up with them, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm going to say, might not be a very popular opinion. I'm actually a very big Graham Potter fan. I like the way they play. But if they're 2 years ahead, they finished ahead of us by three places. They had one more match than we did. They had a negative two goal difference, and we had a plus four. So if they're 2 years ahead, in 2 years, we'll be about eight places ahead of them. So that's fine with me for them to be ahead now. But like I said, I think that, the whole Brighton Palace thing this season, it didn't bother me that, they finished ahead of us. But just going to that match for one, you talked about, the beer and the smoke bomb. That goal that we scored was absolutely, I think that should have been a goal of the season. To think that all 11 players touched that ball. And then the play by Ward, the run by Joel Ward we just spoke about, and then the pass by Schlupp, and then the finish by Gallagher was so, so good. To me, that goal made that match very memorable for me. It really was a brilliant, brilliant goal.
Yeah, completely.
I think also the fact that the rest of the game wasn't the best either.
Good
like
point.
I don't think Palace played particularly well that day. So I think that actually made it 10 times better.
Yeah, almost in the way that the Benteke goal after our useless performance the season before empty stadium. We seem to do it against Brighton, didn't we? Look, we played well against Liverpool when they beat us 3-1 at Selhurst. I'm just going to skip over that because I'm just aware of time. One of the questions I've got down for you, Matt, is how do other journalists view Palace? The reason I'm asking you at this point is our next game was at home to Hartlepool in the FA Cup, and Palace got a lot of good press by providing free coach travel. And in fact, there's sort of been a bit of a love-in. And if we went back to 1986, where you had those two team hats, I think I had a Crystal Palace Dundee ski hat. People would be wearing Crystal Palace Hartlepool United because we've almost twinned with them. I don't know how much you see of other journalists at The Athletic, Matt, but what are their opinions of Palace as outsiders? How are we viewed by others?
Well, we cover every Premier League club. So like majority of the time, I'm with a colleague at every game for the most part. So, I think I don't think I've heard a bad word against Palace from anyone, if I can recall back as many games as there's been. I think everyone's been really impressed, and I think everyone's been very surprised by the resurgence under Vieira and how well it's gone. I think everyone on the outside, as we sort of touched on earlier, was expecting him to fail completely and Palace to be sort of favourites for relegation. So I do think that's worked in their favour. But everyone seems to be really positive about Palace and about the way that the players and Vieira conduct themselves, as far as I've experienced from my colleagues and, from just seeing things and hearing things. I think for the most part, it's very positive.
That's good to know, but I don't know, it makes you almost want to be not liked a little bit to give us a little bit of a bite. As Patrick said on a pod about 3 weeks ago, I just want us to win one thing. I mean, I was chatting with my son Bromley. Well done to Bromley for winning the FA Trophy.
Yeah, good for them.
Is that bigger than the ZDS? Have Bromley actually...
No, not yet.
...won a bigger trophy than we have?
No, don't say that.
So well done. But well done, Andy Woodman and Atla. I've been over there a couple of times. Right. The next game is a very, very important game for me in the season. Being that we got there about 15 minutes before the game, thanks to DR's driving, away to Norwich City. Now, okay, we could talk about Wilf slipping with his penalty.
The first thing, just to jump in and interrupt you, Nick, the one thing that stands out to me about that game is not the penalty miss, is not anything like that. It's the fact that's the first time I heard the Vieira song.
There you go. Just stole my thunder in the concourse. Absolutely, that's exactly what I was going to say, and it's been in my brain ever since. What a super song. It was a bit weird against Man United, actually. It got sung a couple of times, but nobody had thought what the last line would be in advance. So,
yeah, I couldn't work out whether that was like the same song or not, exactly the same words.
Yeah, but yeah,
Premier League, wasn't it? Was it not just Palace are going up the Premier League is what I saw someone people saying that would be you could change it to.
Yeah, but yeah, Palace, the favourite second team of journalists in the Premier League. I don't know. We could have that. So, yes, that's what I was going to say. Another one of those games, it reminded me a bit of the Leeds game. In fact, it was frustrating in the fact that we thought we could tonk them, but didn't actually. What was missing in those games? Because we had a 0-0 against... In fact, let's cover the 0-0 against Brentford as well. We looked toothless in the final third, didn't we? And that seemed to be a theme throughout the season.
Definitely.
Great build up, but not actually able to put the ball in the onion bag.
Yeah, I think that 100% has been a frustration this season. Vieira's mentioned it so many times in press conferences. I think that word frustration is the one that he's said the most, probably the most this season, actually, in a season of progress and positivity. He's probably used the word frustration the most, which I think speaks to how high his standards are and how demanding he is of his players. It was a very disappointing pair of games. I thought the Norwich one not quite so much. The Brentford one, I did not enjoy any of that. I did not enjoy the experience of the stadium. I don't like that stadium. I didn't enjoy the game. I didn't enjoy the feeling of everything. I suppose the one good thing was of course Christian Eriksen. But other than that, I think, as you say, it was just not having any threat in the final third. But it wasn't like that. Palace haven't missed a lot of chances this season. That's not what the problem's been. The problem's been making the right decision at the right time. Obviously, we'll come on to this. I'll very, very briefly say odds on Edouard probably summed it up in the Man United game, the number of times he ran into blind alleys. But I think throughout the season and particularly in those two games, the decisions when the ball was in the final third just weren't quite right.
I'm not going to lie, the Brentford game, I can't remember at all because A, it was my birthday, and B, I got on a boat that sold booze at 10 o'clock at Waterloo that morning, somehow blagged our way into the ground after our tickets didn't work. But it was absolutely fantastic. Patrick?
So two things. One thing, that was kind of the time when Mateta was starting to come on a little bit. He had scored the goal against Millwall, obviously. So he hadn't quite, gotten to the heights he ends up getting at the end of the season. And two, Nick, that was when you started moaning about how Palace couldn't win an away match. Remember that? You were moaning about Norwich and all the other games. And then finally, obviously, we'll come on to it. Watford, you finally got an away win. But you were actually a jinx for that early part of the season, weren't you?
I wouldn't say that I was a jinx, but I was beginning to feel that way. I've picked the wrong season to go to every game, but no, I wouldn't change it for anything. So what did we change there? Obviously things weren't happening. The game after that we did quite well, didn't we? It was a very close game against Chelsea, which we could have won. And again, in fact, let's talk about games against top teams. Because we're going to come on to Arsenal in a bit, but that was one of the performances of the season, beating Arsenal 3-0. The fact that Arsenal celebrated like they'd won when they equalised against us back in November. Man City not beating us. Edouard's incredible debut, beating Tottenham 3-0 at Selhurst. Were there any other teams that were as good against the big four as we were? Because, you know, we seem to be having more trouble against lower teams than we did against higher teams. It's incredible.
As a trade unionist, I'm always taught, never ask a question unless you know the answer. In this case, I don't think anyone does.
This is true. It's the Palace way. I mean, the long miss Sean Hughes in his first book wrote about being a Palace fan and how they were just, it's all the time that he supported, and there'd be a sublime moment of skill followed by a moment of complete ineptitude. And that either happens over a whole season or within a 2-minute spell of a game. And it's always been that way with Palace. And yeah, I think we saw that a couple of times against Man United. So, our next game that comes up on our list is Watford 1, Crystal Palace 4. Now, should we talk about Roy? Roy at Watford, the difference between Roy at Watford, Roy at Palace. Why does Ray Lewington suddenly start wearing long trousers?
Yeah, that was strange. And also, you couldn't hear him as often during lockdown when, you know, behind closed doors. Yep. One of the only things you could hear was
him screaming,
you know, Ray just shouting. And what I found quite interesting was that it was just encouragement for the most part. It was like pretty simple tactical instructions, and it was encouragement. But yeah, obviously changing into trackies rather than shorts. I think that's what did for Watford, to be honest with you. But that game was a big game, I think. I think that was a big game because I think the two preceding games against Norwich and Brentford, that Palace had been expected to win, particularly coming off, I think Palace were in relatively decent form at that point as well. But certainly those were the games where you look at, you're like, right, not in decent form. I don't think they were in decent form. I think that was the problem, was that the form was very patchy at that point, I think.
It was, definitely. Yeah, it was.
I think it was very patchy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I think, therefore, the two games that you're like, right, this is where you can put a run of games together, and then actually you just don't really have any cutting edge. You don't have any of that energy and intensity that you showed through so much of the season has disappeared against two teams that you'd think you would be able to play to do it against. And I think, you know, there was an element of pressure on the team and on the manager, you know, having been through that period where you're struggling for wins and then you don't beat two teams you're expected to. Coming into that Watford game, if Palace had lost that game, then questions would very much have been asked. And it was a goal from a corner, wasn't it? Which again is a symptom of the season, which did improve as the season went on. Another thing that you can be, you know, pretty crediting Palace for is working on that and generally rectifying that. But it was a really, really, really important game to win. And you know, I think they showed desire in that game, and they showed that they were actually capable of coming back and fighting for a win, even if it was relatively easy in the end.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, Watford were the definition of abject. And they didn't, there was no atmosphere in the ground. The players didn't seem up for it. The crowd weren't up for it. Roy wasn't up for it. And it was just capitulation. I mean, they equalised and you thought, oh, well, sorry, excuse the dog in the background. They equalised, but they capitulated. It was just were it not Watford, you'd feel sorry for them. But it was, they were just, it's like they'd given up.
But I will.
It really was like they'd given up.
But I will say, Nick, a couple of those goals we scored were absolutely, were great goals. Wolf's goal was ridiculously good. Gallagher's goal off the cross of Tariq was really, really good. So you said he capitulated, but there were two good goals. I mean, obviously, Mateta was a deflection, but I mean, honestly, we really put it to them. So, I mean, Wolf had the two goals, but the first one was a brilliant. I mean, he repeated the same goal he scored against Norwich, you know, the match before. But, I mean, you're right about them giving up, and they gave up early on in that season under Roy's tenure. But I have to say, in that particular match, I thought we really took it to them, and we could have done that a few other times in the season, and we didn't. But we did. I mean, our finishing that game was really, really good, I have to say.
Yeah, the other thing is to look just at the timings of when the goals were scored.
Right.
You know, I mean, so we went ahead on 15 minutes through Mateta. Sissoko's headed equaliser was 3 minutes later, so you're getting, you're not singing anymore.
Right at you.
And that happened to us a few times this season. But the difference being, Gallagher got one before half-time, so that meant that Vieira was able to set up based on that. That said, you know, if you actually look at when the next two goals are, it's 85 minutes and 90 minutes. So while it looks like a tonking, and it was, you know, the scoreline was 2-1 until 5 minutes to go.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, we came out of it absolutely buzzing. And, you know, I mean, memories of walking down I have no idea what the roads around there are called. I mean, they're unpleasant places that thankfully we won't have to be in for at least another 2 years.
Oh, Christopher.
I'm bloody delighted about that.
I quite also enjoyed the fact for the Gallagher goal from the Mitchell cross was that it was a second time cross. The first one got blocked, and you hear all the waves.
Exactly, yeah.
And then the next one's perfect, and he scores.
That was great.
Yeah, what's the opposite of a shout-out? Shout-out for Watford not selling beer. What's that all about? You know, you've got to have a half-time beer.
I think it's because the concourse is too small.
Ah.
I know.
Interesting.
There's away grounds. I mean, Liverpool, ridiculous. Ridiculous for a top stadium. No room to move there. Man City's all right. But
Senna, the town's too small, mate. It's just an industrial estate with a station. There's a Wetherspoons. That's the only pub of note. There's a couple of others. I went to one about 2-3 years ago with Mike from the podcast as well. And that was because the HF had got our tickets for us. And when we met them, and there was a police van outside the pub. And that is one of, I think, about three pubs that you can find that are within walking distance. And I mean long walking distance as well. If you don't win at that ground, it's a very depressing trudge back to the station. That wasn't the experience this time because we were singing Super Pat Vieira. And we decided, actually, sod this, we're not going to get the early train. We're going to jump in the Spoons and have a couple of pints and enjoy looking at the morose Watford fans' faces. It was a good night.
Yeah, I queued in a car park for an hour that night trying to get out. But other than that, it wasn't too bad. We played Burnley, who were kind of resurgent. Looked like they might be on a bit of a comeback on their manager bounce for their 1-1. Then our next game saw a certain Mr. Riedewald turn up trumps as we beat Stoke 2-1 on a very weird to have an FA Cup match on a Tuesday night. I know they're trying to squeeze everything in to close the season out, but it didn't feel right. Any news on Gyro? Do we know what's happening over the summer? Is he out of contract? Is he looking at re-signing? Is he in plans? What do we know, Matt?
Palace are certainly looking to offload Gyro Riedewald. They, you know, were more than happy to listen to offers if they came in January. I think there was a point, was it last season, where German side, was it Paderborn or Hannover? I can't remember which team, were considering signing him, but it didn't quite come off. It's been a weird one with him. I just don't think he's good enough, to be honest with you. I know a lot of people will disagree with that. I didn't think he was as good as left back as people felt he was. I think he won that Player of the Month award, not by default, but because he hadn't played for so long, he didn't really have anything I guess he did have something to prove, and he did well enough. He was capable enough, but I didn't think he did anything particularly outstanding. Obviously, this wasn't this season, was it? It was last season. But you know, my point stands.
Right.
But I just think with him, he's just not really got any outstanding attributes. I'm not really sure exactly what he does. He's maybe, obviously, he signed under Frank de Boer. Good in a back three, perhaps as a centre back in a back three. Obviously, very good on the ball is probably his best attribute, is how good he is on the ball. Palace are just more than happy to move on from him.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
Two questions, actually. One about Gyro. So you mentioned just now about the back three, and as the season went on, I'd love to see that Vieira went to a back three. So do you think next year possibly he could fit in more because of that back three?
I mean, in theory, yes, but in reality, absolutely not. Okay. No, it's just not going to happen. I haven't checked, but there are probably games where he didn't even make the bench quite a lot of the time, right?
That's very, very true. Absolutely,
In theory, yes, I can see your logic, but in reality, it just won't happen.
Okay. And then my other question was about that Stoke match. My biggest memory of that was Tayo's debut. So I'm a very, very, very big advocate of our academy. So with that in mind, I know towards the end of the season, you know, Vieira had mentioned getting more playing time for Tayo and for Rakitić, it didn't happen. So what do you think going forward the future looks like for players actually getting time in the first team from the academy?
Yeah, good question. Very good question. I wrote a big piece in October about the new academy, the redevelopment of the academy on the opening day. And I wrote a piece a few weeks ago after Palace's under-15s were defeated in the National Floodlit Cup final, having been defending champions. Sean Derry's son was playing in that game, played quite well, to be fair. To come on, Tayo Adramola was one of those defending champions as well, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah,
because I mean, it was 3 years ago, but
back in Wally, good team that was. Mooney.
Yeah, he's still a scholar, so it's easy to forget that he is still technically, he won't be next season, but he is still technically a scholar, so he's under 18. He'll be an under 23 next year. I can see him certainly being kept around in the squad and sort of effectively being back up for Tyreek Mitchell and playing under 23s again. But this is where the big decision, and this is what I wrote in my piece, was that now is the time for Dougie Freeman, for I suppose technically Rob Quinn in the under-18s, although less so because he's under-18s, but Paddy McCarthy in the 23s and Gary Izzet, the academy director. Like, this is a time where they've got, and obviously Patrick Vieira as well, they've got to make a decision. They've got to say, well, you know, if Patrick Vieira can guarantee that they can train with the first team a lot, and that they will get some minutes, then I think they'll stay.
Got you.
If that can't happen, then the likelihood is they'll go out on loan. There was sort of a feeling from Palace that they made a wrong decision not to loan Jezra and Rakitić out in January. Obviously, he's kind of got his pathway a bit blocked by Michael Olise and Jordan Ayew. Right. I wrote a piece about Jezra, and obviously came and made his full debut against Manchester United, which I got to say was quite unexpected. But
good on the CV though.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I thought you could see that he hadn't played many games.
Exactly.
Obviously,
yeah.
Like hadn't been out on loan at all, and you could see that there was more to come from him, and there will be more to come from him. But I think, you know, with young players, it's just about working out what's best for their development, and one size fits all approach never works, in my opinion. I think you have to base it on the player, the person, and that's what Palace will do. And I think you can certainly expect if Jezra and Rakitić does stay, then he will get games. But I reckon, and this isn't really based on anything I've heard, but my instinct says that he'll go out on loan, and that'll probably be to a Championship club, maybe for the first 6 months, and then you see what happens. And potentially then, if he doesn't get games, I'm not saying he won't, but if he doesn't, then you put him down to a League One club potentially. And I would think that there'll be plenty of clubs looking at him. Jack Wells Morrison as well. I think he'll be around the squad, but again, might benefit from going out on loan. I wonder whether physicality might be an issue for him. He's not the biggest. Joe Whitworth in goal, it's really difficult for goalkeepers. There's a lot of really, really good talent sort of in that under 23 squad who are actually really under 18s other than Rakitić. And a lot of, although will be first year pros this coming season. So it'll be really interesting to see what does happen.
So with that in mind,
Patrick. Just talking about Gyro again and kind of linking up the academy thing, was I read somewhere that Gyro was great with the kids in actually bringing them through and nurturing them and teaching them about life as a footballer. And I'm going to link this to the death of Andy Fletcher in Depeche Mode, who wasn't their best musician, but was actually, you know, RIP Andy Fletcher. I saw him back in the day, but he was the bloke that held the band together. Without him, there wouldn't have been a Depeche Mode, yet he was a lot inferior musically to the others. So, you know, a lot of these players like Martin Kelly, we don't know about how important they are, even if they're not playing, to actually keeping the ethos of the side going, but actually keeping it going. Because, you know, when you've got a training match, you've still got to have 11 against 11. Yep. You can only put 11 out on the pitch. So if you've got these players that are happy to be side bit players, that's brilliant. And maybe undervalued, I don't know. But I just had to say that because, you know, you kind of wrote off Gyro a little bit there, I felt, Matt.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Completely. Yeah, I should have mentioned that as well, in fairness. Like, he has been very good for the likes of Tyreek Mitchell as well. And he has been very good for the young players. I think they've all mentioned him as well. So, you know, to be fair to Gyro, like, he has had an impact, even if he hasn't necessarily had an impact on the pitch. He's had an impact with his attitude. His attitude, as far as I'm aware, has been perfect. His approach, his mentality. So certainly no question there. It's only a matter of the fact that he doesn't fit in on the pitch. But I don't think you can be too sentimental in keeping players simply because they're good around the place.
To
some extent, yes, you can. Like, if there's like a question mark where you're like, well, this guy's good, but not quite good enough, but actually let's give him another year because he can help transition the young players in, then, you know, by all means do it. But don't think that's really the way they see it with Gyro.
So I just want to add, if you haven't had a chance yet to see the Coming of Age documentary on Palace TV, you have to watch it. It's really, really, I've been watching it the first three episodes. It's really, really good. It gives you a really great background on the U18 season last year. There's a little bit in there at the end of the under-23 season when they won, got promoted. But if you get a chance, you should really give it a watch because it's really great insight. And Paddy McCarthy, with those kids, he's brilliant. He really is. Him and Darren Powell are great. So,
right, going to move on to another three results in March. Chris, what do you think of these three results? I'd argue this is our best run. Away at Wolves 2-0, drawing 0-0 at home with Man City, and then thrashing Everton 4-0 in the Cup. What do you think?
Well,
best run?
I think, yeah, I mean, objectively, you've got to say, you know, that's... I think Matt had already said the turning point was earlier, and I think he's right. But, you know, this is a run that, you know, gives incredible confidence and, you know, one where we stop really, in my opinion, looking back behind us and, you know, start looking forward and looking up the table, which is, you know, what we ought to be doing and certainly aspire to be doing, but haven't always been able to, certainly not over the last 4 years. It's very much been a, you know, not getting relegated is enough, has been the view from some around our club, including myself to a certain extent. Wolves away, you know, showed what we could do. I mean, certainly in the first half, you know, it was a dominant performance, you know, great goal from Mateta. And, you know, the only thing I would say is that it was difficult to get the atmosphere going because it's a very wide stand at Wolves. So very, very narrow. So even if songs were sung, they were massively out of time with each other, and that was chaotic.
Weirdly, that didn't really come across from the press box. I was sat directly opposite you in the upper tier, at the bottom of the upper tier. And if you're scared of heights, don't ever go there because there's a big drop. It's quite a sheer drop. I actually thought the atmosphere at Wolves was pretty good. I quite enjoyed the atmosphere at Wolves. But I do see what you're saying, and I think that's the case in a lot of stadiums as well. I think it wasn't quite the case at Villa, but it has been in the past. Mm. I know we'll come on to that.
Yeah, Villa was a weird game, but for reasons we'll talk about.
The word I'd use against Wolves is panache. Mm. We just, no, I mean, the one where he just chipped the ball over the keeper and you had to watch it 17 times to work out how he'd actually done it. Mateta.
That's the one.
The striker conundrum. While we're on Mateta, Patrick, Matt, who's the first choice striker going forward next season, given that we probably won't have Gallagher, so that's might change the way we think. And very quickly, because I'm just thinking about time.
For me personally, I think Mateta fits the system better than Edouard. I'd love to see Edouard play and produce, but you're talking about that stretch there of matches. That was the time when Mateta started coming to his own again, and he just never really stopped being, you know, producing either in a cup or in the league. So for me, it's Mateta, but I'm happy to prove wrong if Edouard gets 20 goals next season.
Yeah, I'm not convinced by either of them, if I'm honest with you. Mateta is one that Palace didn't know what to do with either, I don't think. I think there was an element of, what do we do with this guy? Like, do we sign him permanently? Do we send him back? I think even up until they signed him, like shortly before, they were very much considering whether to send him back and potentially sending him back to Mainz. But I think they saw enough in him to make that deal permanent. And, you know, if come the end of the season he had scored more goals, I think they may well have considered selling him if there was interest in him. I think it was a value decision, someone that you can keep around and hope that he scores some goals. And then potentially if he's done that, then you can sell him. But Edouard, for me, is a left-sided player.
Agree.
Best there. Yeah. But Vieira says he's a number nine. Ask Vieira that question directly. Vieira's pretty certain that he's a number nine, so I'll bow to his experience and his knowledge, but I don't see it really.
Yeah, what do you think, Chris?
I really like Edouard. I think he's been most effective from the left. You know, there have been times where I've thought, hang on, who is that? Because, you know, you don't see him that many times, and his shirt number isn't one that I'm used to seeing. And the speed where he cuts in from the left and then, you know, plays a 1-2 with someone and actually has the directness to have a shot, that marks him out compared to some of the other attacking players that we have. So I really like him. I think he can do a job centrally, but that requires ball-to-feet play that we haven't been doing this season. Now, if we reorient our game, you know, if other players leave, especially influential players who cross the ball, and I could see him linking up with Elise really effectively, for example, in due course. And it depends on who our new midfielders are. So I think Edouard definitely has a future at the club, and a positive one. But for now, Mateta is the target man, and that's the way that we play at the moment.
So, Matt, I've got to ask you this question. Clearly, Vieira rates Zaha as a striker also. So if you've got Zaha, Mateta and Edouard, where does that leave Benteke for next season?
And Plange.
Oh, yeah, Luke Plange. Yeah, you're right.
Plange will go back out on loan.
Okay.
Maybe not immediately, but I don't see a reason why you wouldn't send him back out on loan. Under 23 football, there's no benefit to him playing under 23 football. He's not ready for the Premier League, hasn't played that many games in the Championship. Can't say I've seen him, but like, just don't see how he's ready for the Premier League. But Zaha in the middle is very funny because he hates it, clearly. Vieira sort of says this, and I think he said it. But everything that he says and does points to the fact that he's so much better in a roaming role in the middle.
100%.
Like, where he can play on the left as well. I miss him running at players down the wing. I know he's done it a bit this season, but I miss him running at players at full speed down the wing. But, you know, when I interviewed him in 2020, I think it was 2020, at the end of, it was like November to December 2020, something like that. He spoke about being more efficient. Basically, you know, he's learned to save his energy rather than like doing all of those runs, and that he's got into better positions, and he's learned to do that and to get shots away where he's not exhausted by the end of it. And I think that's really helped him with his best return this season, best goal scoring return. But the hints were there back in 2012, Wolves away, two goals, playing as a striker in the middle, you know, turning a defender and smashing it in, and, you know, two very accomplished goals. And I really like him in that kind of free role slash sort of centre forward slash left wing role, where he can just do whatever he wants. And I think that's the best thing for him. And him and Vieira have a really good relationship. I know that, you know, Vieira really likes him. You can tell that he thinks he's a bit of a pain in the arse sometimes, but then, you know, who doesn't think that of Wilf?
True.
You know, but the best thing about Wilf is his determination to win.
Absolutely.
People outside of Palace don't understand this. Even people at Palace, you know, Palace fans, I don't think understand that his petulance stems from this hatred of losing.
Exactly, wanted to win.
And this hatred of being dispossessed of the ball, and his frustration at his teammates not doing what he wants. And I spoke to his teammates for a piece on his early years, and his coaches, and they said exactly that same thing. But I just want to end on what Ibra Sakaya said about him. Famously scored the goal that kept Palace up against Hull in 2011, I think it was, under Friedman. He basically said that if Palace were in the Champions League, then Wilf would absolutely love to stay at Palace, because it's not about wanting to leave Palace as such. It's about wanting to be the best that he can be. And that is what Wilfried Zaha is about. It's about being the best that he can be. And I think that's really important for people to remember that.
Yeah, I don't think there's a single Crystal Palace fan that wouldn't begrudge him going off somewhere and, you know, trying to win medals. I'm aware of time. Are you okay to carry on, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely fine.
Yeah, okay then.
Having said that, we could probably speed through a few of these results, couldn't we?
Yeah. I mean, I was, and
we'll have the dog in the background.
this is the chaos in the background. We'll have a production meeting in the middle. I was thinking of making the end of season thing a free part, because we've still got 10 games to talk about. But what do you think?
Well, you asked me about that three-game run. So City at home, you know, we gave them a run for their money, could have beaten them, and we could have lost it, you know, but there are very few teams that don't even concede a goal against them in a season.
One has done it besides Crystal Palace, so that's how great it was. Yeah. So, yeah.
I'll take that. Yeah, exactly. So that's success. So I think that's all we need to say on that one. Great performance. We could speed on to Arsenal. Again, very, very good performance. I'm not going to say much about the win apart from the fact that, you know, it was a good performance and we deserved to win the game. You know, it was markedly different to the time when we played a side that was weakened when we were playing against in the late Arsene Wenger period when we were singing "We Want You to Stay." We were the best team then, but it was, you know, this was different. And the second thing that was memorable about that is that we had Danny Rojas from Ted Lasso came and joined us in Blocky,
which was a
very special occasion for us.
Very nice.
So that was cool.
Just very quickly from me, the Everton game stood out because that was when Palace had Zaha, Gallagher, Olise and Eze on the pitch.
First time.
The first time from the start. Yeah. And it worked brilliantly. I'm not sure you could do that forever, but that was great. And then the Arsenal game for me was certainly up there as one of the best performances I can remember in the Premier League from a Palace team.
Yeah, because you've got to remember, Arsenal were much improved from when we'd played them earlier on in the season. That was a very, very good result. And then we went through a spell of we're in the cup semi-final, so let's focus on that. So saw us lose 2-1 up in Leicester, the highlight of which was me finding out that Paul Weller was playing up there. De Montfort Hall, and there was a pub with nice roast dinners.
You had two Patrick, dinners in that pub, didn't you?
I had a dinner before the game and a dinner after the game.
Wow.
Patrick.
Yeah, I wanted to, since we're on the Chelsea match, we can gloss over the actual match because I'm heartbroken at that loss. But I want to ask Matt. So Harrison Blitzer, the highly publicized interest in buying Chelsea. I know a little about them because over here in America, they own the 76ers, the basketball team, and the New Jersey Devils hockey team. Sixers are okay. Mm-hmm. Devils are absolutely putrid as far as that. So the people aren't really in love with them over here. So how do you think that their interest is going to affect, you know, the board level? Are they going to be leaving, do you think? What's going on with those two?
Good question. Hopefully Dom and I will write something about this in due course, but I think it's awkward. Yeah, it's naturally awkward. You're kind of caught flirting with another club, well, not even flirting, like outwardly sort of looking at another club and trying to buy them and offering for them. I think that's really awkward. I think that's really difficult. I don't see how you, there's certainly questions about how you come back into the Palace boardroom and sort of get on with everything. And
it's like you're ever off catching you looking at Tinder, isn't it, really?
Tinder.
But you know, it's I don't know. It's what can you do? Because obviously they're going to be reticent to put up money to buy players, aren't they? I mean, it can they be frozen out? I don't know.
I mean, you know, I think that is the thing. Is what happens next? Is what do they want to do? Is there a way that they? I certainly know that they've enjoyed this season a lot more than they did.
Right, previous.
I'm sure everyone did, but certainly they did. You know, I think it's no secret that they weren't overly enthusiastic about Palace in terms of, you know, sort of attending games and being. You know, they're businessmen, right? They're not football fans necessarily. They're businessmen.
100%.
You know, whereas Steve Parish is a football fan who's also a businessman. Steve Browett's a football fan who's also a businessman. I mean, John Texter, I would put in a totally different character category, but you know, these guys are businessmen first and foremost. It's almost like this is a thing that they can afford to just sit back and see what happens. Obviously, they're not going to want to lose money. Don't get me wrong, but you know, they have the money. They're so wealthy that it's not the worst thing in the world. They
gonna
really
be, gone are the days when your local mobile phone done well businessman owned your club, isn't it? Or your carpet salesman. I was going to ask you about Steve Parrish. He's been chairman 2010 to, what's that, 12 years. He's maturing as a chairman now, isn't he? And you're talking about John Tex, so I know he's brought into Brazilian club Botafogo and Portuguese club as well. So he's kind of diluting, which tells me that actually John Texter, who knows a bit about running clubs, is very happy with the way that Steve Parrish is doing things. What's your assessment of how Parrish has changed the way he's doing stuff?
Yeah, I think anything, you know, experience, you learn a lot from experience, don't you? And I think, you know, bringing Dougie Freeman back in as sporting director seems to have gone very well. They seem to work together well. I think he's got the club's best interests at heart. It's his club. He wants to build a legacy, doesn't he? He's already built a legacy. I think, you know, I'm not saying that there wasn't a legacy before this, but the academy is going to be his legacy, I think. Obviously, the stadium, what happens with that is very much up in the air, but I think he would like to do that and that also be part of his legacy. But I think in terms of success, no other chairman, as far as I can tell and work out and remember from reading and that, like, I don't think any other chairman could claim to have had such success in their tenureship. And at some point he'll go, at some point, whenever, that could be in a few years, that could be in 10 years, but he won't be here forever. I think he's very ambitious as well, but I think he loves Palace, and I think whatever happens, that is going to be the forefront of his mind. If he was ever to sell his stake, or if he was ever to sort of get bought out properly, then I think, you know, he would make sure that the club's future was secure. And I think the way that the structure of the ownership works helps that as well. No one can outvote each other. No one can outbid each other in that sense. He's certainly learnt a lot, and he's, you know, I think there's some luck along the way, but who doesn't need luck and who doesn't have luck? But he's made some really good decisions as well.
Yeah, and it's good that he understands that he's a custodian. And if you've got a chairman that knows that, that's half the battle, isn't it? Wembley, Sunday, April the 17th. Conor Gallagher couldn't play. Did it make a difference? Don't know. That first half in the semi-final, Chris, we looked like we could possibly do something, didn't we?
We did.
Went wrong in
retrospect. In retrospect, we were set up too cautiously. We didn't play with the panache that we know that we can. And eventually, you know, they got their big guns out. You know, a former Palace lad, of course, in Ruben Loftus-Cheek, and that was what changed the game for me. You know, disappointing, but a special day out, and hopefully a sign of things to come from Palace that we got that far. And next year, let's make sure that, you know, we don't end up playing a team who we've loaned our joint best player from at that stage.
What was the feeling inside the club after that defeat, Matt? Because obviously you're going to be going, but there's got to be a certain amount of pride of getting that far. Okay, we didn't have to leave London on our journey to Wembley. Yeah. It was a fairly easy route. But
I think you summed it up there with the word pride. I think that's what people felt was pride. They felt proud at the way that the team had, you know, come through, and obviously beating Millwall was important to people, I think. Certainly it was important to the fans. I think that is important to the fans, is important to the club. Patrick very, very, very briefly touched on that academy documentary. Paddy McCarthy is talking to Jack Wells Morris. A bit of spoiler here, by the way, so just quickly switch off if you don't want a spoiler. But Paddy McCarthy is talking to Jack Wells Morris and Joe Whitworth, both Palace fans, about the Brighton game. Yeah. And he asks them what it means, and they respond both privately and in the dressing room. So I think people know basically that if it means something to the fans, then it needs to mean something to the players and the staff. And
yeah.
I think Vieira knows that. And he said he needs to learn, and I think he has. But I think there was an element of disappointment, an element of what could have been. But I don't think anyone sort of was absolutely... I think there was also probably an acknowledgement that maybe they got it wrong in terms of the way that they set up. I think people would agree that it didn't quite go right in the second half with the setup, not changing it in the second half, the formation. So I think that was an element of maybe things could have been changed earlier.
Right. Patrick, anything else to add on Wembley? I mean, you didn't come over because you suddenly didn't. A great story about Wembley is Patrick's one of your after-show rivals. I know you do a thing on The Athletic where you answer questions, but Patrick does the back-of-the-nest show reaction.
Highly competitive. Go ahead.
A guy called T. Where does T live?
In St. Louis, Missouri. St. Louis.
St. Louis, right. And he actually got together a GoFundMe thing.
That was funny.
To fly over to England to go to Wembley. And his wife found out, and it was Easter weekend, and right. Had to refund several people. He wasn't allowed to come.
That was funny.
Yes.
That was funny.
So, disappointment against Chelsea. Then it was my last long away game. To a place I'd never been before, I'm glad I went to, was Newcastle. But I don't know whether it was a hangover from the game. But
we just forget that game.
Yeah, but under their Thunderbird, a likey manager, they've turned the corner and haven't even spent that much money really yet. So it's going to be frightening what they can do next year.
Wait, hold on. Wait. They didn't spend any money in January. Are you sure about that? Are you sure they spent money?
Go on, enlighten me, Patrick.
I mean, they got Chris Wood, correct? Right? They got a right back, an England right back, and they got a...
Dan Burn?
Right. They got, got Dan Burn, and they got a great midfielder. I mean, I think it's been a little bit more. I think it's been about 120 million, I believe, this in... Right? I believe so. So they spent some money.
That's nothing, is it, for them?
Oh, going forward it will be in retrospect, but right now that was a lot of money. Listen, that game was frustrating, but you're absolutely right, Nick. There's no doubt that was a hangover from the FA Cup loss.
For me, that was one of the worst games of the season.
Wasn't even close. Yeah.
All those stairs.
Even almost the worst, almost.
All those stairs to the away end to go into what seems like a recreation of a 1970s community centre. It's got quite a nice view. It sells warm beer. No, just too many steps.
Yeah.
And there was it was weird that it was a Tuesday. Was it Tuesday or Wednesday? I can't remember. But there was
Wednesday.
It was one of those away games where you think, right, you know, I've done it. Newcastle away on a Wednesday. But yeah, we had a great time, didn't we? Because of all the regional beers and whatever. Then we get to Leeds United again, a team fighting for their. We seem to be playing a lot of teams fighting for their lives, didn't we? They held us to a 0-0, another clean sheet. And then for the first time since the early 90s, we beat Man United at Selhurst. I don't think enough's been made of that. If you bookend the season between Chelsea 3, Palace 0, and Palace 1, Man United 0, Patrick, how would you sum that up in a couple of sentences?
Repeat that question again, because I don't know how you skipped over. We were relegated Watford. We're not going to talk about that.
I was going to save a special treat of Roy walking around the ground, right. Clapping the fans.
I was going to say,
they're too far away.
We can't listen. As much as I appreciate what Roy did for us, standing Watford down and then how Roy reacted into that match has to be one of my highlights of the season. It has to be. It was fantastic. One, I always hate Watford. I mean, everybody does. Outside of Watford, I'm assuming. And then for Roy to... not even walk across the pitch to clap his own supporters. And it talked to, was it Tompkins? At the end of the match, and said he said he's too far to walk over there. I mean, we can't go stop for that. But, I mean, I don't know how you
know, apologies to Watford, Aston Villa and Everton fans. I inadvertently scrolled past you. I know you've been listening all the way through to see what random Crystal Palace fans think of how you've also how missed, you did against us.
You've also missed Southampton, which came after Leeds.
You told me not to mention that.
Southampton was
he told me never to mention Southampton again. So I don't.
Well, it's terrible place.
Why?
Again, same, much like Watford, but somewhere that I'd never seen us win until this time.
Talk about
So I'm going to talk about it for a couple of reasons. I mean, I'll start with the fact that it was another bloody header from memory that we conceded. So that was frustrating, but Eze's equaliser, sweet, an important moment for him. You could see the relief on his face. So that was great.
Absolutely.
And then for Wilf to score that very, very late winner and the scenes there, it was very, very special indeed and a very happy train journey back for me and a lot of other people. Really pleased to have made it there and finally see us win a game at that ground.
Which was more of a fire drill goal, the Southampton one or the third one against Watford, do you think?
It's a great question. It's got to be Southampton, no?
Yeah, I'd say Southampton.
Because a lot of people left when we scored the third against Watford as well. I'm just wondering who left in...
It's a great question, Nick, because when you think about the fan base, both of them hate Wilf for different reasons. The whole Ward-Prowse thing with Southampton and obviously Watford and the Hornet. But, you know, I think the Southampton match was worse because, you know, he came on as a substitute. You know, we always have, you know, we know how Ward-Prowse winds him up. For him to come on and score that goal so late, again, I mean, a late winner for Palace, an away match, limbs, I mean, that had to be, to me, had to be the highlight at the end of the season for me was that win for sure.
Yes, and I'll
currently the wallpaper on my phone as well. Celebration of that goal.
Nice, nice.
And then the rest of May, we got a 1-1 draw at Villa Park, the defeat to Everton, which was a travesty. Really, should that result have stood? Would it have been any different had somebody not put their fingers in Christian Benteke's face? I don't know. And then we'll get to the end of the season. Patrick, sorry.
That's all right.
Bookend the season between that defeat to Chelsea and victory against Manchester United, who I actually think are a spent force now, and it'll be years before we see anything from them.
Yeah. As far as that first game, you know, you're talking about the first game in Vieira's era. Didn't have Gallagher, obviously, because he's obviously a Chelsea player. Didn't have Anderson, had signed but wasn't able to play. So Rexaki got on late. So that was an awful start. And then I remember at the end of that match, people had the nerve to be comparing him to Frank De Boer, which I thought was embarrassing to compare Vieira after one match to De Boer's, I'll call it an error, not an era, because it was that bad. But the United win was brilliant. I mean, you're absolutely right, Nick. They're a spent force. They've got a new manager now, so they're bound to bounce back at some point. But with City and Liverpool being so far ahead of them, they're only ever going to be going in for third or fourth place anyway, probably behind Chelsea, who now have a new owner. So to me, to beat United, the first time beating them ever in the Premier League at home was brilliant. Wilf to score, former United player to score that goal was also brilliant. Capping off a great season for Wilf. So that was nice. I mean, it didn't mean much as far as the stand, the end of the season standings or anything as far as promotion or relegation or even getting into Europe. We almost got them relegated to the Conference League, though. But good old Brighton beating West Ham messed that up. But, you know, you're right. That was a good end and a good way to turn around what was really a terrible start. And I think, again, just to wrap it up, I think Vieira's season overall, for me, was absolutely brilliant. The cup run being the highlight, but just overall, you know, to the style of play. I mean, I hate to keep doing this, but if anybody got to watch me and Nick and DR and Chris and Mike do those watch-alongs last season under Hodgson and how I would scream at the television, I was so upset.
Oh, my days.
And then to have a new manager come in and be so different and so expansive and so a joy to watch, it's been brilliant for me. So I've enjoyed this season immensely. I've been a Palace supporter since early 70s. My first manager ever was Burt Head, if anybody even knows who that even is. That's how long I've been a Palace supporter for. So it's been a long time. So I'm so happy. And I think the future looks bright for Palace. So I'm looking forward to it.
very short comment from me, which is simply that we started the season looking up because, you know, we were at the foot of the table, and we were literally looking up the table, but also up the pitch, because we were playing the system that we've, you know, developed and learned how to play and showed that we can play now. But we didn't have all of the players, as Patrick has said, and also we just couldn't do it, and we weren't doing it right in that first game. You know, I spent a lot of time with my teeth gritted and in some cases my hands over my eyes as we were playing the ball sideways, pretty much on the goal line, and I couldn't understand what we were trying to do. Yeah, comparing it to Frank de Boer was clearly wrong, but I wasn't absolutely convinced that it was an experiment that was going to work at that stage. I'm delighted that my fears at the start of that first game were not vindicated at all, and that we, in fact, performed extremely well through the season. You know, some lessons to learn, of course, but overall, a season where we saw a lot of great fun performances. That's the main thing. Watching this team was fun, and that didn't used to be the case.
100%.
So, agreed.
Yes. Go on, Matt.
Yeah, I agree with Chris. The main thing this season has just been being able to enjoy it again, because, you know, you've got to give credit to Hodgson for what he did. No one's denying that, but it became almost intolerable at times. Certainly, you know, from my perspective as a writer as well, trying to find things to write about was really difficult, and trying to engage people with that as well was difficult. And to write about things when everything was so the same all the time was really difficult. And to see that as a fan as well, that was just so, again, difficult to deal with. But I just want to say, like, the Man United game was really important to me as well, because they moved the Leeds game to Monday night? That was going to be on a Saturday. They moved that really late. My dad went to the Manchester United game, hasn't been all season. He's had a season ticket for, I don't know, 15 plus years in a row. Hasn't been, has been going to Palace for 60 odd years, but for various reasons, which won't go into specifically, but I'm sure you can work out, he hasn't been able to watch Palace this season, right. And that's been really shit for him. And it was just really nice that he got to go for the first time since before COVID, so over two years, and he got to watch Palace win. It's the first time that he'd seen so many of these players, first time he'd seen a Patrick Vieira team in person. Wow. So it meant a lot to me that he got to go. And I think it was a reminder for me of what football means to people and how important that is in our lives, and how much the community aspect of things is important to us, both independently and also, you know, very quickly touch on the Palace for Life Foundation as well and what they're doing. And actually, the highlight of the season for me off the pitch, other than my dad getting to go, was the DS Eagles and Patrick Vieira with them. Initially, at the there was an event the foundation put on back in like maybe October, and one of the DS Eagles came and sat down next to Patrick Vieira and just gave him a hug. And like, Vieira was just so casual and genuine with him. It was just such a pure moment. And then, like, he was taking questions from them, and one of them basically, I can't remember what the question was exactly, but Vieira basically said, if we finish in the top four, I'll take you out for dinner. But he also said that he would get them down for training, to watch a training session, which he obviously then did. And that video was really pure as well. And also the Made in South London campaign that they've done. So those are really important things. I think, you know, we talk about the things on the pitch, but I think Vieira has shown that he understands the club. I know everyone says that about their manager, about their club's manager, but I think Vieira has shown that he understands South London. He gets it. He gets what the club's about, and he gets the community aspect of it as well.
Yeah, you kind of preempt what my next question was going to be, which was your moment of the season. But you've done that, and I'm going to ask Patrick and Chris that in a minute. But just to finish on Vieira, Matt, how do you think he'll be with us for a while? And how much of a draw is he to bring players in? I mean, we'll talk about his future briefly. Clinton Morrison said to us earlier in the season about the academy being hugely important for bringing players in that might have gone north to Tottenham or elsewhere and keeping them. And all right, so we're not quite like we used to be in the Championship where we could bring players like Sean Scannell through and exciting players. And I kind of do miss that a little bit. And, you know, being in the Premier League, they've got less chance of coming through. But with the facilities we've got now, they've got more chance of making it. What with Palace being the first club as well to put in the whole post-career thing if your career ends early. I'm not sure quite what my question is, but I'm sure you'll be able to answer it.
Yeah, so I think Vieira is a massive draw for players. I think anyone who comes in will be impressed by him, impressed by what he's done this season, impressed by his mentality, impressed. What's impressed me is the way that he puts his playing career in a box. Patrick Vieira is not... Patrick Vieira, the invincible Arsenal, is gone. That doesn't exist anymore. That Patrick Vieira is in the past. He's put that in a box. He doesn't come into play anymore. You ask him if he passes things on to the players, and he says, not really. Like, he does, but he doesn't do it in the way of it being Patrick Vieira, I won this, so listen to me. It's just occasionally passing things on that he knows. But I think for me, the important thing with him is that he does just want people to see him as the manager and judge him as the manager of Crystal Palace. I don't think it matters that he was so successful in his playing career in the sense of you might get with, I think it comes across with Frank Lampard and Mikel Arteta a little bit that they're maybe kind of playing on their playing careers. Not that they're not good managers necessarily, they might well be, but how long he'll be at Palace is really hard to know. You know, a lot depends, I think, on how the season starts. I think that he will attract interest from elsewhere if Palace continue to do really well. I think just naturally because of his name and the fact that obviously he was at City and Arsenal, and the academy is really important, and I think he understands that. Admittedly, he didn't give Teo Radramola a chance despite indicating that he would. He only gave Rakitić a start on the final day, but I think he is aware of the need to bring young players through, and I think he's bought into that vision that the club has. So I think overall he understands that, and I think, you know, Michael Olise in particular is one that sort of has a good relationship with him. Wilfred Zaha has a good relationship with him, and I think you'll see this summer potentially that the new guys that come in will be buying into Vieira's vision as much as they will Dougie Freeman's vision.
Yeah, brilliant. Patrick, moment of the season.
I've kind of got, I'm lumping him in too. So my first one would be the FA Cup run in general, because, you know, like you, Nick, I've been a supporter for a very long time. My first FA Cup run was the 76-1 when we lost to Southampton. So my desire in life is just to see Palace win a cup. If not the FA Cup, the League Cup. So that run I thought was brilliant. You know, beating Millwall was great. Obviously, you know, Gyro's goal and all, beating Everton. And then my second one would be the, I'm going to cluster them, the Man City results, the 2-0 and the 0-0, and the Arsenal results, because I have a particular dislike for Arsenal. I'll give you that background very quickly. Kenny Sansom, my favourite Palace player, was sold to Arsenal when I was young. And Ian Wright, my second favourite Palace player, was sold to Arsenal. So I've never been an Arsenal. I've always hated Arsenal. So to get the 2-2 and then beat them 3-0 at home were my highlights of the season, because, you know, just beating Arsenal. And then you go on to, you know, I hate to do this, but going to AFTV after when they lose to Palace and have them moan and complain always makes me laugh. So for me, those were my highlights, those wins and the FA Cup.
Yeah, My two highlights, going to the hub pretty much every game with my son. I promised him That's when
brilliant.
He was ill.
That's brilliant.
So we went home and away. And then I got ill, so we had to stop five games in. So we'll have to restart that in a couple of years. But my moment of the season, away at Millwall, after the game, the bloke in the Rupert Bear trousers and flat cap, leaning over the edge of the Millwall stand, pointing and ranting for 15 minutes solid, putting his fists up. It was just hilarious. But Millwall away was just surreal. It was, I've never known, all my years of going to football, I've never known anything like it. Just the atmosphere, just it was visceral. And to actually turn them over and to see Mateta just on the edge of the 6-yard box, just nod it in. Yeah, that was the moment of the season. Chris?
There's so many to pick from. So I won't cheat by doing loads. But, you know, I mean, clearly, one of the things I will say is I've always wanted to do every league match of a season. And since we got in the Premier League, the first time, I think I went to 30 games. And that's the least games I've done since we got promoted. And every time I've got to kind of 34, 35, 36, right. Something's happened, like a girlfriend's had an operation or someone's chosen to get married or something ridiculous like that has stopped me from getting there. And this year, you know, watching as we get closer and closer and I'm getting 35, 36, and then a game gets moved to a Thursday night.
Oh,
and
no.
I have to, you know, make arrangements with work to make sure that I can still go. But I did it. I got to all 38 league games.
That's brilliant.
So I'm well happy with that.
That's brilliant.
And then for us to win the last one against the team I hate most in the world, Manchester United, with Wilf scoring the goal, the player that they rejected for not being good enough, bought him off us for peanuts, sold him back to us for less than that, and then he beats them with a deserved goal. Just super happy. You know, I mean, it crowned a very successful season for us in terms of it just being exciting. There were lots of other moments along the way that I could double the length of this podcast with, but I won't, thankfully, for all you listeners who, if you're still listening at this stage, because it's been a marathon, not a marathon march, but a marathon show.
Yeah.
But what a season. And yeah, so that was my moment of the season, actually finishing it.
Yes. It was a very, very good season. One of the most entertaining seasons that we've had for many years. I've renewed my season ticket already.
Nice.
Even though I know I'll miss the first few games, I don't care. Vieira's the way forward. He knows exactly what we need. Matt, tell us about The Athletic. Give you a 30-second free plug.
Yeah, so we are online. I cover Palace specifically, so if you subscribe, then you get to read usually three pieces a week about Palace, you know, including various features. I've written about the academy. I've done interviews with Wilfred Zaha. There was an interview with Martin Kelly, Sean Scannell, Milo Yednak. Any former player you can think of, I've interviewed them. Did big pieces on big moments in the club's history, like Hillsborough administration, Wilfred Zaha's 10 years at the club, etc., etc. So we just cover everything about. I cover everything about Palace, break transfer stories, write backgrounders about players that come in, so you get to know what the players are about, the new players, new signings. Big pieces like 10 big pieces on James McArthur. So anything you can think of, anything and everything about Palace, The Athletic's your place to go.
The greatest on the shed, Suns. Is that going to be an off season? We're running out of things to write about. So the greatest half-time challenges. No, look, I actually subscribe, and I'm very reticent to subscribe to stuff. But the way I look, I used to buy magazines. I used to buy 90 Minutes. It's the equivalent of that. And we had in the Away Car Club where various members of Back of the Nest went with DR up to away games, and the Athletic pods were quite often on. To see us through the journey, and they're erudite and intelligent, which in football writing is hard to come across. So thanks very much for coming on with us today, Matt. as far as the match report goes, we're shutting down for the summer. But you'll be able to catch us across social media if anything does happen. Check out YouTube, TikTok, MySpace, Bebo, Facebook. If it happens, we'll be there. Keep checking out The Athletic. Looking forward to August already. If you're going to Australia, let us know via the tweet. Yes. We'll be well jealous of you. No doubt we'll be logging on to some dodgy stream online to watch that. And have a good summer. Up the Palace.
Come on, you Palace.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport, powered by fans.